Call a meeting in order. We don't have a quorum yet, but the institutional accreditation of financial aid is always to do with these stuff.
Who is are we having for that presentation? Oh, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, Tricia Grimes from the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Just try to get the computer back up here. Have in your packet a handout on the slideshow that I'm going to go through relatively quickly, and a legal-sized spreadsheet with some information about the schools that are affected by this.
We have them both, Ms. Grimes.
The requirement was adopted by the legislature and signed into law by the governor in May 2007. And it applies to schools eligible for participation. So the students receive Minnesota state grants and several smaller financial aid programs. There's similar language for schools that participate in the Minnesota Self program in another part of the statute. What does this requirement mean? It means that as of July 1st, 2011, in order to participate in the state of Minnesota financial aid programs, post-secondary schools must participate in the federal Pell Grant program. The requirement does not mean schools must participate in federal loan programs such as Stafford Loans or PLUS Loans. Schools not participating in federal aid programs will continue to be licensed by the Office of Higher Education and cooperate. Their students would not receive financial aid from state financial aid programs if they were not participating in the federal Pell Grant program after July 1st, 2011. What are the state financial aid programs in question? The largest two are Minnesota State Grants and Minnesota Self Loans, but this would also apply to Minnesota GI Bill benefits, Minnesota Indian Scholarships, and other programs such as the Chief Scholarship, Safety Officer Survivor Grants, and State Work Studies. What was the reason the law was proposed? The main reason was consumer protection. It was designed to be an encouragement for schools to become participants in federal aid programs so students would be eligible for federal grants before they take out loans. Some students are taking out self loans and private student loans when they could be getting federal Pell Grants. The second reason was good stewardship of state money. Some institutions that are very small struggle to administer financial aid according to law. Other reasons included the idea of building capacities and expertise to administer financial aid. The 5-day training required for participation in federal financial aid programs provides financial aid knowledge that is really very necessary in small financial aid offices. If the state of Minnesota were to adopt its own financial and administrative requirements, many schools would have to meet two sets of standards for school capabilities, state and federal. So instead, we decided to propose simply that schools meet the federal standards. Other effects on students when institutions do not participate in the federal aid programs. One of the main effects is student borrowing. On the spreadsheet that you have, the legal-sized spreadsheet that you have, there are listed 28 schools that are currently participating in the state grant, the self-loan, or both. At these 28 schools, 1,080 students borrowed $5.1 million in self-loans in 2007-08. Those students would have been eligible for at least $900,000 in federal Pell Grants. If they had received the federal Pell Grants, fewer students would take out loans, and some students would borrow smaller amounts. I might say that these estimates for the Pell Grants are on the conservative side. We estimated them for students who are already receiving state grants. There would be some students who would have their whole calculated need met by Pell Grants. That's called the Pell-only students. And so those would be in addition to the amount shown here. So these are estimates of what students at those schools would receive that are on the low side. Minnesota state grants are coordinated with federal Pell Grants. In calculating state grants, the office calculates the amount students would receive from both programs, federal Pell Grants and Minnesota state grants. And under current law, the office then subtracts the federal Pell Grant from that total, even if the student will not receive a Pell Grant. As a result, at institutions that are not participating in the Pell Grant program, the lowest income students tend to receive very small state grants. Here's an example of a single independent student. Tuition and fees are around $8,361. We plugged in a $10,000 allowance for room and board, books and supplies, transportation, etc., while enrolled, for a total of $18,361 as the price of attendance. And then we list the various kinds of financial aid. And the left-hand column is what it would be at an accredited school participating in federal aid, and in the right-hand column is what it would be in the non-accredited schools that are not participating in federal aid. So, on the left-hand side, you can see the student would get a $2,500 Pell Grant. This is a student, single independent student with no children, income of $15,000. The state grant would be $2,065 in either case. And then another problem with schools that are not participating in the federal aid programs is that they're not eligible to have their students receive the federal income tax credits and deductions. So on the left-hand side, you can see this student would be eligible for $1,608 in a federal American Education Opportunity tax credit. And on the right-hand side, those students are not eligible for the tax credit. On the left-hand side, you can see the student would be eligible for subsidized and unsubsidized Stafford loans and then a self loan. Now, this example assumes that the student would borrow all of the price of attendance or have it filled with grants. In practice, most students would actually have some earnings from work while enrolled and during the summer that they would use to substitute for some of that amount, but we wanted to just show you how much they could be borrowing. You notice in the right-hand column, the student ends up with nearly $8,800 that they would have to try to come up with, even if they borrowed the full amount they were allowed to borrow in a self loan. They could probably come up with some of that from work. On slide 11 is state grants received and estimated Pell Grants that would have been received. This is just a graph of the amounts that are on your legal side spreadsheet. The blue is the amount students at these schools, the total amount students at these schools received in state grants in 07-08. The red is our conservative estimate of the amount they would have received in Pell Grants had those schools been participating in the Pell Grant program. You can see in most cases the amount the students would have received in Pell Grants exceeds the amount that the students received in state grants. Here are some of the effects on students when institutions do not participate. As I said, students would not be eligible for the federal higher education income tax credits and deductions. And if the school chose to participate in the federal student loan program, they would not be eligible for Stafford loans, both subsidized and unsubsidized. Students with need are eligible for subsidized Stafford loans, in which the federal government pays the interest while the student is enrolled. The interest rate is 6% for new loans this year, and next year it will be 5.6%. In addition, federal loans have deferments for students who re-enroll on more than a half-time basis, and they have economic hardship deferments. Now, here's another example. I'm not going to spend a lot of time going through it, for what would the financial aid package would be for a dependent student. And then here's tuition and fees at these institutions. This is the tuition and fees that are on that legal size spreadsheet that you have. And as you can see, the tuition and fees range from around $6,000 to a truck driving school that charges tuition and fees of $27,000. Most of these schools have programs that are less than 1 year in length. This slide 13 shows the fall enrollment at the institutions that are not participating in Pell Grants in 2007. And you can see that enrollment ranges from 5 to 350. And then slide 14 shows the self loans dispersed. This is the total amount of self loans received by students at that institution. Slide 15 was meant to have the average amount students borrow at each school, and I made a mistake, and I apologize for that. On average, students borrow about $5,000. And that is probably their total student loan indebtedness from the self program. They may have private student loans in addition to that, but because these are one-year programs or less, by and large, most of these students would not be accumulating the kind of debt that a student at a four-year school might accumulate. And here's an example of, for an unmarried independent student with one child, income of $25,000. And again, you can see that this student would be eligible for $5,300 in Pell Grants if you were attending accredited school, an accredited school, but no Pell Grant if they were attending a non-accredited school. I might mention that many of the schools on your list are cosmetology and barber schools. There are 9 cosmetology and barber schools in Minnesota that are accredited and do participate in the federal Pell Grant program. Model College of Hair Design in St. Cloud has both cosmetology and barber programs. 3 of those 9 schools are quite small. They have 30 or fewer students, and they are currently participating. When we testified, when this bill was passed, and again last year, we mentioned that it probably costs $20,000 to $30,000 for a school to become accredited and begin participating in the Pell Grant program, and then about $20,000 a year to continue to participate. We did recently hear from one small school who said it had cost them $10,000 to become accredited. In an effort to assist institutions in starting to participate, the office had a workshop last October. Out of the 28 schools, about 20 schools attended. We contacted the schools repeatedly before scheduling the workshop to try to pick a day that would be convenient for them, a time that they were available. And a federal official came and talked about what it takes to participate in Pell, and several of the accrediting agencies talked about what they charge and what their process is for seeking accreditation. 4 cosmetology schools, there are at least 2 national accrediting agencies that are recognized by the U.S. Department of Education to that accredit cosmetology schools. Mr. Chairman, that kind of concludes my prepared remarks. I'm wondering if the committee has any questions.
Ms. Grimes, I guess I have a question. Like someone like the Rochester School of Hair Design that has 22 students, or even the Trails End School of Taxidermy that has 5. What does it cost them to get their to be able to get their accreditation, or and then, you know, compared to what they're going to get out of it with just a few amount of students?
Mr. Chairman, it would cost them at least $10,000, probably closer to $20,000, to become accredited. But their students would be receiving at least $55,000 total in additional Pell Grants. So in theory, if they raise tuition enough to cover the $10,000 to $20,000 cost, their students would still be getting more in additional Pell Grants than they would be paying in additional tuition.
But that's an annual amount.
Well, right. But for example, if a school had 30 students and they raised tuition $500 a student, that would raise $15,000. And the students would be now getting Pell Grants of $4,000 or more. So even if they paid the additional $5,000 out of that Pell Grant, they would have $3,500 more to pay for other kinds of expenses.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know, looking at the list of the unaccredited items or institutions that are listed here, are any of these not-for-profits, or are they all run as for-profit schools?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Obermueller, that's a very good question. Number 12 on the spreadsheet, Maranatha College is a not-for-profit. All of the rest are for-profit schools.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the testifier, I'm just wondering, could you please clarify the list that you provided us? Are those institutions accredited or not? Especially, for instance, on slide 10.
Mr. Chair, if you look at the legal size spreadsheet in the far right-hand column, it says whether they're accredited or not. None of them were accredited and participating in Pell Grants in the 07-08 academic year. One has since become accredited, and four are in the process of becoming accredited, but the rest are not accredited. And on slide 10, the Institute of Production and Recording in Minneapolis is now accredited. Let me make sure I get the right line here. Station Duty School is in process. Midwest Duty School is in process. Park Avenue School of Cosmetology in Park Rapids is in process. And Salon Professional Academy in Wake Park is in the process. Mr. Chairman, I might add that of the 9 cosmetology schools that are accredited and participating in Pell Grants, 2 of them, I believe, are in your neck of the woods, Cosmetology Careers Unlimited in Hibbing and Cosmetology Careers Unlimited in Duluth.
Okay, and one last question, Grimes. How many students do we think are in the NISQU system that maybe qualify for Pell Grants that, and loans and everything that never bothered to apply?
Mr. Chair, students attending into 2-year institutions part-time, only about 25% of them fill out a FAFSA. So many of those students that are attending part-time might be eligible for some additional aid that they're not currently receiving.
Isn't that as important to get those students?
It is, and we're hoping to partner with NISQU on a continued effort to get them to fill out the FAFSA. We do participate in a number of efforts currently. Many of them are under the label College Goal Sundays, in which financial aid administrators go to areas that have events to try to encourage families to bring their tax forms and sit down, and they give them one-on-one help in filling out the FAFSA. We do have a number of initiatives, but we can do more.
Wouldn't it just kind of make sense that it is a condition of registering that you just fill out a form?
Mr. Chair,
am I that dumb then?
Our office has left that kind of judgment to the systems and institutions themselves rather than making it a requirement from our end.
Any other questions? Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I'm late, but can you tell me what the average percentage of students that graduate from these institutions are?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, I could get that for you. I don't have it on hand. I may have it in my briefcase, but I can provide it to you later. In general, these types of schools tend to have good relationships with a select number of employers, and because they are very occupationally focused, many of their students do find jobs. If they do not always stay in a given occupation for many years, but they do tend to find jobs initially.
Mr. Chairman, that was my second question. Do they find jobs? My first question was, what percentage graduate from the...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, I'll have to get that for you. I'm sorry, I don't have it off the top of my head.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wondered specifically, because of the really large enrollment at the Institute of Production and Recording, if we know, I mean, that in particular, if I look at the numbers, the amount of money in cell phones dispersed, as well as the number of enrollees in that program, if there are jobs that many jobs available in that industry, and I wondered if you had any data on that in particular.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Norton, I'll have to get back to you on that. I'm sorry, I don't happen to know that.
Thank you.
Okay, no further questions. Thank you, Ms. Grimes. Representative Bingham. Are we going to hear from the other side? Oh, yes, excuse me. Do we have a number of folks that want to come down and... Go ahead. Excuse me. Welcome to the committee. And while you're coming down, we'd like to welcome the ninth grade from Kirkhoven Murdoch Sunberg School. Welcome, to the committee. Hope you're having a good time today. Welcome, Representative Anderson.
To that point, Mr. Chair, I'd like to maybe embarrass my niece who's part of that group, Ellen.
Could we talk to you after the committee hearing about your aunt? Welcome. Welcome to the committee and identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Peggy Schmidt and I'm with the Minnesota School of Barbering. We are a for-profit school on 3615 East Lake Street. We have been in business since 1985 and I have had federal accreditation in the past. The first thing I'd like to address today is if you look at the House File 1414 on line 1.11, it says, the Board of Regents, the University of Minnesota, is operated, and then they cross out the word privately, and it says, is a private nonprofit institution. I wonder if that is a mistake, or if it was the intention to make sure, if we're not supposed to be private schools. Do you see that?
We're not on that, though.
This is the House of Representatives where it talks about the eligibility of institutions. May I bring it?
No, I'm aware of it, but we're not talking about that.
Oh, we're not going to talk about that.
We're talking about the issue with accreditation and state grants and the current law that requires the schools to be accredited by 2011 or not be eligible for students. For our state grant program.
Accreditation is very expensive, as you heard from Trish with the Minnesota Higher Education Coordinating Board, and it's normally done by an independent third-party source. It's very expensive. And to say that we could raise our tuition to offset the cost, to me it doesn't make sense because that would cap the cost onto the students. It's my understanding, and I'm not as sophisticated as Trish is in terms of numbers, but it's my understanding that the bigger the state grant, the smaller the Pell grant, the bigger the Pell grant, the smaller the state grant. So they would kind of offset each other, and then raising the tuition, I don't see the benefit that it would have to the students in general. You have to understand that traditionally we provide services to the underserved population. Currently, I have 18 students enrolled. Since 1985, we have graduated, 95% of our students graduate our program, and we have 100% placement. So we do provide a service to the state of Minnesota in that we provide barbers. There is one other school in Minnesota that is privately owned. It's Mola Barber School, and their graduation numbers mirror ours. They graduate most of the students that start, and they also place 100% of their students in the industry. I guess the reason that we're here today, and there's quite a few of us, and I hope that some of the other schools will testify as well, is it's not that we don't want to be accredited. I think accreditation is wonderful. The problem that we face is the ripple effect. It's like an unfunded mandate where you mandate that we must be accredited, and then there's no funding to go along with that mandate.
Okay. Any questions of Ms. Schmidt? And you know, I can understand your concerns, and we—that's why there was a timeline, I believe, until 2011 built into this, and hope that we could kind of solve this problem. And have you or other institutions tried to work with the Office of Higher Education to see if you can make this thing work for yourself?
No. Hopefully, that's something that we can open the door to or be a segue today for. I have been federally accredited, and I'd like to just tell you a brief story. I was federally accredited in 1988. We participated in the Pell Loan and the State Grant Program and DFL. We gave out 4 student loans in 1988. 3 people defaulted on the student loans. I don't know if you saw the headlines, but it said Minnesota School of Barbering is the highest default rate in the state of Minnesota. We were put on suspension because 3 of our students did not pay out of the 4 of the students. And we were suspended from federal fundings until we could work out our problem. So everything isn't always as it appears. The federal accreditation is nice, but if what if three people don't pay loans out of four, now you're on suspension anyway. Does that mean that they're going to suspend our state grants as well? And how do you control who pays back the student loans and who doesn't? Obviously, it's take one, take all. It's been suggested that we take the Pell Grants and not the state, it was suggested that we take the Pell Grants and then not the Title IV loans in the program, and that would maybe eliminate that. But in speaking with my financial aid officer briefly, because all of this just came on us real fast, he indicated to me that if you offer one of the programs, you have to offer the program. So even if we all did get federal accreditation, who's to say that three loans wouldn't get paid back and would be suspended anyway? So that's been the problem that I have. I did participate. I did go through the federal accreditation process. It was very extensive. The independent third-party source brought four people from Washington. They all had really nice hotel rooms. They all had nice cars, and they ran up quite a nice little bill for me. We also had to be audited that first year. An independent auditor will charge you a minimum of $6,000, and that was in 1988. No matter how many students you have, you're going to pay the minimum for an auditor. That's another hidden added expense. You also have to pay your dues to the third-party source every year. And then every 5 years, they come back and they audit you again. I did go to the seminar in Washington. I spent 3 days in a seminar, and they read the manual to me that they gave me. That class now is in excess of $3,000. I went, as a teacher, of course, I know how to read manuals. They actually sat us in a room for 3 days and read the manual that they gave us. Just my experience with federal funding.
Well,
for federal accreditation.
You know, I think the intent as well, I mean, it's for the good of the student.
Absolutely.
And you do have another couple of school years to work this out. So I'd like the Office of Higher Education to try to accommodate the institutions that are going to be falling off here in a few years to see what we can do. And that's all I can promise you, because I think, and I speak for most of the members of the committee, I think if there's federal monies and that we can access, we should try to do that.
Absolutely.
We've required it with our other programs, whether it's the GI Bill or whatever that we passed recently, that we try to get all the federal money we can before the state plan program or state monies kick in. So, okay, any questions? Thank you, Ms. Schmidt, then, and I think we're going to move on to the next bill, because we do have a full agenda. And we'll have one more short testimony. Come on, Tom. Then Carla will take you next.
We're in a roll call vote downstairs, so.
Go vote.
Thank you for.
We'll have you. Welcome. Just identify yourself for this.
My name is Laura Kelly. I'm one of the owners at Minnesota School of Beauty. And I would just like to make sure that we're really thinking. I know that this bill is in place. But one of the concerns that I have is it really good for the students? And let me just propose by saying, did we do some calculations with schools that are currently participating in federal grant aid versus those that are not? What tuition dollars are there versus what tuition dollars are at the ones that are currently not participating? And what I have found in my research is that we are substantially lower in tuition than those that are providing Title IV funds. So in other words, you come to my school, the students are still borrowing less money coming to my school versus a school that is participating, whether they get Pell Grant or state grant anyway. It's offset because their tuition is much higher than ours. We chose not to be accredited for several reasons, and not to be forced to do Title IV is, you guys are going to laugh at me, but no laughing. It isn't always about the money. It's about, we're a new school. We've only been in business 5 years. The most important thing for us is right now is our reputation. So it's not about jacking up the tuition and just trying to mill the students through. We're trying to actually
service to students, get them good paying jobs, and to have them out there talking about it. So our tuition is substantially lower. They get state grants, and they still borrow less money than those schools that are currently actively using the funds. So I just want to know, before we did this, did we really research everything? Because now we're going to be forced to do this. Guess what, honey? My tuition's going up, and so is a whole lot of other things. And who's going to be there to mandate that's really looking out for the students? That's all I have to say, because if we have to do it, yes, we have to raise tuition. It's not for the good of the students. The student might get more free money in Pell Grant, but I, as a school owner, am going to collect that money. It's not going to be the student. And we're going to charge more, and they're going to borrow more. So I hope we really looked at it. Is it really good for the students? I understand why we need regulations, but I don't know that this is what we really should have kind of went through. There should have been some other stipulations beforehand, of forcing everybody to go Title IV. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much, Seth. Representative Atkins, we'll take you next. Representative Atkins moves House File 1560 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Higher Education and Workforce Development Bill. Well, and Mr. Representative Atkins, you have an amendment too, right?
I do. There's an ostrich amendment, the A1 amendment.
And so Representative Atkins moves the A1 amendment. And that percentage, 44 is what you're...
Correct.
Okay. Representative Atkins moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll be relatively brief for you. We've got a significant injection of some help from the federal government coming to give our students a hand with their financial aid. Unfortunately, the way that it's currently crafted, many would not benefit from that, even though we've got roughly $60 million coming from the feds and on top of $10 million available. It would have no benefit to them unless we make these adjustments in the law. The first change in the blank that we filled in is currently at 46% of the cost of attending the institution. When you go towards calculating the grant stipend, currently it's at 46%. This would change that to 44%. What that means is that the student would have the ability to pick up an additional, that 2%. So students that are currently receiving financial aid would be able to actually get a little bit more financial aid with the injection of money that's coming through the federal government. It may sound different that it's like it's going down, but it's actually the amount that and maybe what I should do, Mr. Chair, is go through that. It says on line 1.9, the amount of a financial stipend must not exceed a grant applicant's recognized cost of attendance, as defined in Subdivision 6, after deducting the following. Currently, we're deducting 46%, and that makes the amount that the student can get less. By only deducting 44%, the amount the student can get would actually be more. So it seems a little counterintuitive, but the point in reducing it to 44% makes the student eligible for additional funds. The second change is on line 1.21 through 2.2 provides the basis on which we will calculate the maximum. And that is going to be based on, rather than established in law, you're in, you know, coming back and forth to legislature multiple times. What it would do is use as a benchmark the University of Minnesota's the tuition, undergraduate tuition and fees in the University of Minnesota system for the academic year of the grant. That way we don't have to keep coming back again and again and again and setting some artifice in law. We actually have a figure that we can base this off of, which is the University of Minnesota figure. That doesn't mean that University of Minnesota students are the only ones eligible for the grant. It's just setting a benchmark so that students and the institutions of higher ed can determine what amount of aid their students would qualify for. Essentially, Mr. Chair and members, this is the mechanics of getting the money from the feds into the actual hands of the students and making the students a little bit more eligible for aid than they would be under current law. And with that, I do have witnesses that are available to testify if you need testimony. Otherwise, I'll do my best to answer any questions or concerns members may have.
So, Representative Atkins, my question to you is between the 44% and the language dealing with the university and the two-year program, so how much of the $55 million did we spend that's coming from the government put together?
And Mr. Chair, I'm glad you asked that question. I was trying to calculate it in between running back and forth from committee to committee. We should still, there's actually two things that work here, Mr. Chair. One is to make currently eligible students eligible for more aid. The other thing, though, is that we would also have a group of students that might be eligible for this much aid currently would be eligible for more aid. So that at the end of the day, I would anticipate that we'll still spend the amount of aid that the federal government has allocated to us, which is in the neighborhood of about $59 million. I do have Mr. Laird, who might be able from the Minnesota private colleges, by the way, also qualify for financial aid. We're just using as a benchmark the University of Minnesota's tuition and fee figure. If he'd like to come down and visit with you as well, I'd be happy to turn you loose on him.
You're so smooth. Did you answer my question?
All of it, Mr. Chair. All of it. I thought my question, Mr. Chair, was did you want to know the impact on an individual student? Because I know that's how
you
are.
So you just spent all the money, is what I'm asking. And Mr. Laird, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, we have the ability to spend all of the money under this formula. If the chairman desires to have some of it go elsewhere, I argue with the chairman, of course, but your question was, is it going to spend it all? It could, under the formula.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question. You addressed why you would put the University of Minnesota, which I think is a good idea, as the maximum, the average of the four-year, but I'm wondering why you did not do the same for the students enrolled in the two-year program, if there wasn't some sort of benchmark that you could use for that as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, the university is a terrific flagship institution that I think we all acknowledge is a good benchmark. I would only get in trouble, I think, if I were to pick out a particular Minskew institution off of which to base the figure. One thing, by the way, that I'd be remiss if I didn't mention specific to the chairman's question is that Congressman Obey, others at the federal level, if we don't allocate these funds along the lines of what has been laid out, not just in this bill, but in terms of what we're supposed to be doing with the money, getting it through this device into the hands of students, they have made some comments publicly that they're not too keen on continuing to give these monies if we don't allocate them the way they are supposed to go out.
They can go out in many different ways.
And I understand. I'm just saying that the hand that feeds us has indicated that they're concerned. I don't think so much about Minnesota, but across the country there have been others that have dipped into these funds in a variety of ways. And they have not, and I know your part is on making sure that the money gets to the students themselves and the most need-based students among those. And I wanted to make sure that that was pointed out because they have made it very clear in a number of statements that that's what they expect.
Representative Martin?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on that. Have you given some thought to, and I don't blame you at all, Representative Atkins, from wanting to choose an institution, but I wondered if you could not put that there would be an average of the Minskew two-year programs or something like that as a benchmark. I just wonder if you'd given thought and knowing you didn't want to pick an institution but use an average of all the institutions as that benchmark, if you'd considered that.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Laird actually just had a very succinct answer to it. I'd like to turn to him.
Mr. Laird.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Norton, the history here is that the maximum grant using the University of Minnesota's average tuition has, at different points in the history here, gone into the statute. The determination of the maximum grant for the two-year institutions is determined biannually in the session law and in the appropriations bill.
And we've used specific institutions. And I think, and we've used the university before, and then when the tuition went up, it didn't keep up as the maximum because it wasn't in statute then.
Right.
The adjustment would take place.
That's correct.
Mr. Laird, can you tell us, Representative Anderson?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, I'm looking at the House Research Summary, and it talks about what that average undergraduate tuition fee is at the U of M Twin Cities campus. But in your bill, it says for the University of Minnesota system. So are you going to be using the average just for the Twin Cities campus, or are you going to be including Duluth, Morris, Crookston in calculating what that average would be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, that is an excellent question. I very much appreciate you asking it. You got an answer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, that's your choice. The average tuition at the University of Twin Cities campus is likely to be higher, but the average of the undergraduate tuition for the university-wide system would not be that much lower either. So it's a reasonable choice to make. The students that are going to benefit from this will not benefit by a huge number of dollars either way.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm assuming that Representative Atkins, because you have it written as so, with it being the entire system, do we know what that number is?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I believe it's relatively close to the figure at the Twin Cities campus, but one of the advantages of laying a bill over for potential inclusion is that we can look at it in both fashions. And what I'll promise to you is that we'll get the information together looking system-wide versus the campus itself, and then as the bill is marked up as an omnibus bill, we'll have both figures off of which to work.
Mr. Laird, can you tell me just offhand of the approximately $70 million that Representative Atkins just spent, or is attempting to
spend? If only.
Yeah. How much is going to go to the private colleges, and how much will go to the public institutions?
Mr. Chairman, under present conditions,
he's got a change in here, so.
Well,
give it to me what it is today,
yes,
versus what this little percentage change will do, and the cap on the tax.
At today's need values from families, the division of the dollars is of about 48% to the Minsky institution, about the same amount, about 30 to 32% for students at the university and at the private colleges, and the remainder is for students at other private institutions. With the changes that are made, if they're made together, the principal beneficiaries on the reduction of the student share will be the lowest income students primarily attending Minsky institutions, and the students who will benefit slightly more from the increase in the maximum grant will be at the university and the private colleges. The policy objective here is to increase the grant program support for middle-income students at the higher level and for lowest-income students at the lowest level with the change in the student share.
Well, I would assume that the changes, at least on the, and I, maybe Ms. Grimes or Mr. Caniston comes on with their estimates, but the change on the back setting the University of Minnesota as the cap, the maximum, the only people that could benefit there would be people attending the University of Minnesota or private colleges.
That's correct.
But you can't, I would think that, so I would think right now you've got about 32% going to the four not-for-profits, right?
Yes.
In the state grant program, and another 16-17% going for the for-profits. So now what would those percentages be with these two changes in here?
I have seen the run that divides the benefits according to family incomes, I've not seen a run that divides the end values that go to certain kinds of institutions.
Okay. Well, Mr. Tanis maybe can provide the committee with that information. Any other questions to Representative Atkins? Then he renews his motion that House Bill 1560, as amended, be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
We'll see this later in the omnibus bill. Representative Bingham. And
yes.
Representative Reinert moves. Let's see, I got to find your bill here. Representative Reinert moves that House Bill 1414 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome to the committee, Representative Bingham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sure you're elated that the first time I'm before your committee, it has nothing to do with sex offenders, alcohol, or putting people in jail.
I'm relieved.
House File 1414 is a bipartisan bill that, as introduced, would exclude private for-profit universities from being eligible for state grant dollars. This would not affect any current enrolled students. This would start for students enrolled in 2010. This does not include private nonprofits. If this bill is enacted, it could save around $20 million for the state grant dollars, And the rationale from my perspective for the bill is when the for-profit universities are charging a very high rate of tuition, and I know there are probably people who do not go to the for-profit universities in here that see their tuition bills and could say the same thing, but this is an exorbitant amount of money. On top of that, they are subsidized with the state grant program. We have wonderful state colleges and universities. I am a product of Winona State. I'm proud of it. We put a lot of money into the universities. We put a lot of money into our students. And at this time, during this budget year, we need to prioritize our dollars and focus them in on the state college universities and private nonprofits. It's a relatively straightforward bill, folks. So I do have Graham from the Minnesota Student Association to testify on behalf of the bill. But other than that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for questions and appreciate the committee's support.
We'll let Graham speak first, and then we'll take the questions.
Okay.
Graham, welcome to the committee. You know the process.
Yeah. Long-time watcher and long-time listener. My name is Graham Allen, for the record. I'm the Government Relations Director for the Minnesota State University Student Association. I'm here on behalf of the students at the seven state universities in support of the House File 1414 and the discussion that will hopefully arise from today's hearing. We feel that Representative Bingham's bipartisan bill brings up an important issue of funding priorities. In higher education, at a time when the state budget has drastically decreased, and higher education, like every other state program, is on the chopping block. And first, I want to make this clear. I am not an expert on the for-profit higher education institutions, and I'm not attempting to challenge their educational quality or legitimacy. I will leave that up to experts. That being said, I would like to make a few comments and put this bill in some perspective as to who receives state-sponsored financial aid. According to the National Association of State Student Grant and Aid Programs, or NASGAP, most recent annual report covering the academic year 2006 and 2007, the Minnesota State Grant Program provided approximately $22 million per year in financial aid to students attending for-profit institutions. That accounts for over 13% of all financial aid awarded by the state grant program. To put that in a broader perspective, the proportion of state financial aid awarded to students attending for-profit institutions accounts for less than 5% of all grant money awarded nationally. 28 states either do not fund or spend less than 1% of their total aid on students attending for-profit institutions. Minnesota ranks third in the nation in the percentage of total funding spent on students who attend for-profit institutions. Nationally, the trend for states is to spend the bulk of their state financial aid on students attending public institutions. Half of the states spend over 75% of their financial aid on students attending public colleges and universities, whereas Minnesota spends approximately 61% of its state grant funding on public school students. I know it's a lot of stats. It comes down to this for us, and I think I kind of reiterate what Representative Bingham has said. You know, my question to this committee and its members is this. In a time of declining investment in higher education, especially for our publicly funded institutions, should we be funding those attending for-profit institutions? There's been, there's estimates that, there's been proposals to cut our public higher education institutions upcoming in the next biennium anywhere from $100 to $300 million. Where are the priorities? Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of House File 1414. I will stand for any questions you might have.
Okay, Representative Dettmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess I we're looking at taking away some choices from students in Minnesota. I'm a product of the Minsky system, and I also attended private college for my master's, but I see these other institutions being a good support for our students, providing training and opportunities to get in the workforce. And I do believe that probably for-profit institutions also pay taxes, which goes into the Minsky system, I'm assuming. I really believe that we need to support all forms of education in the state of Minnesota and not just limit it just to the state institutions. That's my feeling. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we currently do.
Okay. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bigham. If your bill passes and this happens, what are you intending to do with the state grant program? Are you looking at enlarging the amount of grants that we provide, or will it go to balance the budget, or what is your intention if you have this amount of money saved and not awarded?
Mr. Chair, Representative Norris, more students would be eligible to get the grant money. I have no intention of it going to balance the budget.
State? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm not aware of this fund actually has been pretty well funded over the last few years, and actually it's been running a surplus, which has then been turned again over to the students' remaining amount in their living expenses and so forth. So it isn't that, and we're not cutting this as far as I know. So at least I wouldn't support that. I think the overall approach over the years has been to be fair to all students, and I think one of the things that we overlook, perhaps, we look at the tuition some kind of an indicator, but I think the success of students finding work is probably the most important one. So I guess I'm supporting all kinds of student opportunities if it leads to a job. And so I'm, again, basically going on record opposing changing anything and allowing all students to benefit from our state grant program.
And Mr. Chair, I'm not opposing the schools or the students. I'm just saying that in these times, some of these schools are publicly traded. I mean, these are corporations, and I believe that we put a lot of money into our state colleges and universities, and I think that's where our priorities need to be, and I know that Representative Seifert and I, agree that we need to be focused on our schools and our students within the state system and universities.
Put one more point.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I know it's been mentioned that it's a bipartisan bill, but I think that's kind of a weak argument. There's only one Republican on the bill. Just want to make that point.
He happens to be the leader of the Republican House Party.
Representative Clark.
Oh. Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, can you give us any information, I don't know, either the author or the testifier, about what kind of percentage of low-income people and people of color are enrolled in the for-profit private schools?
Representative, is that the question for you or for maybe some of the test players coming from the schools?
Mr. Chair, either if research, Ms. Novak may have that, otherwise those testifiers would have it, Representative Clark. Thank you.
Ms. Novak, do you know that? Well, we'll get you information on that either way. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Representative Bingham for bringing this forward, because I know this was a difficult thing to do. I do think when we're in economic times like we are now, we have to be creative. And one of the things I can tell you over the years when we've made cuts to our higher education systems, these grants haven't been touched. And we talk a lot during budget cutting times about spreading the pain, making everyone feel the impact. And our private schools have not had to carry that same painful cut that our public institutions have during these tough times. And this year, again, we're talking about, you know, up to 10% or 15% of budgets of the University of Minnesota and our Minsky institutions being cut. And I think this is one way that we can support our publicly held institutions that we have a moral obligation to fund, and not close down any private schools, but just say, for the time being, as we have these budget cutting times, that we're going to allow the students going to these institutions to help offset the increases in tuition. So I think it's a brave thing to do, and I know you'll take some heat, and I'm sure the testifiers will chew you up here in a few minutes, but I was happy to sign on this bill, and I think in these tough times, sometimes we have to do things that maybe we would prefer not to do. This is one of them, and again, thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Allen, do we have any statistics on whether the programs that are offered in the private for-profit colleges are also available in the MNSU or the state colleges?
Representative Bingham.
Programs?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. I don't have specific details, but I know I'm going to say that there are probably some of the for-profit colleges that offer slightly different or maybe more frequent classes. You know, maybe they're more accommodating at night or whatever, or online. You know, they may have some of the same programs but have a little bit more flexibility. I also feel that with this bill, it will hopefully kind of shine a light with Minsky, who I believe is driving in the right direction with more accommodating schedules, some online learning. So I think this would be a good competition thing, too, because they're going to have to, obviously, folks, if they want the state grant money, will be enrolling in either MNSCU, EU, or private nonprofits. And so hopefully it'll raise the bar a little bit for some competition on that way, too. Otherwise, people will just continue to go to the for-profits and make that decision to forego the state grant money if the accommodation is there. But I don't have specific apples to apples who offers what program.
Mr. Chair,
Representative.
If there's going to be other test fires, I would like that information so that a student that wants to train, they can't find it somewhere else, and that's the only place to get it, then it's not exactly fair to say they can't have a grant.
Okay, I have Representatives Slocum, Poppy, Hawes, and Eastland. Can we let the other side present first, or are your questions specifically for Representative Bingham?
You're all my friends.
Is that okay, Representative Easton? And Downey, too, now, Representative Downey.
Could I ask the author?
Sure. If you've got a question for the author, otherwise we'll wait until
okay.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bingham, I'm just kind of reading the bill here, and I guess what I'm looking at is on line 1.9, into higher education reciprocity agreement on state student aid programs. I mean, these are student aid programs.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to exclude some students from student aid programs. I think this isn't aid to institutions. This is aid to students. And I think one of the things that I guess that's my question is we're going to exclude students by excluding institutions. That the institutions are legitimate education providers. And students choose those institutions. Why would they not be, or why would we exclude them from the aid that we as a state are giving to students to further education?
We have to stand by.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, it's the aid the students can then take and go to one of our state colleges or universities.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
I mean, the I understand what that, that's what you're saying.
Yes.
But I mean, it's fencing out some students. It's sort of who are pursuing a higher education that is legitimate. It's offered in our state, and I mean, I think it is really a precedent that I disagree with. I think what I think we should be doing is we should be encouraging students to get a higher education, and we should be offering that benefit equally if they're going to some kind of an accredited institution. And it's not our job to decide if it's a private, public, or a state, or a for-profit. I mean, that's my view. I just think this is really an inappropriate place to put this in here. I think it's supposed to be aid to students, and students aren't determined by where they go to school.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Eastland, all I'm saying is that those students can use that state grant dollars at our state college universities or private nonprofits.
Okay, Representative Downey, did you want to wait until the other testifiers? Is this for... Okay, and Representative Bly, the same thing? Okay, thank you. Now we have Ms. Smith, would you care to testify first? Well, wait now. No, Ms. Smith, what I'm going to do, because you're a paid lobbyist, you can testify anything. We're going to have the students and... Mr. Cosell from the Career College Association come down. So I have a Janice Flannery, a Nicole Molinoff, and a Tom Cosell. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Flannery, would you care to go first? Or you want someone else to go first?
I thought since Nicole was here
you want Nicole to go first? Okay. Nicole, welcome to the committee and identify yourself. You know the process.
Thank you. I'm Nicole Molenhoff. I am a student over at Globe University. This is my first year. I will be completing at the end of this quarter. I chose Globe University for the flexibility, the convenience, the ability to finish a four-year degree in an accelerated program. I'm doing it in 2 years and 3 months. Versus the 3 years that they set it up to be. I went to Globe University for the convenience option. It's 3 blocks away from my house. It's close to my work. I utilize online nighttime and daytime classes. Globe University has brought so much into my life in the year that I've been there, and I don't think that it is fair for it to be taken away or... The grant dollars, I get about $3,000 a year. Doing an accelerated program, after 16 credits, I don't have to pay.
Excuse me, that's state in the state grant program?
Correct. I pay for my first 16 credits. After 16 credits, I no longer have to pay for my credits, which doing 20 credits, or this quarter, 22 credits a quarter, saves me money, plus my estimated $1,000 a quarter in state grant funds allows me to save money. So we're talking big ticket dollars going to for-profit higher education, and they have programs such as paying for these extra credits for me to take, where I don't have to pay them out of my pocket. And any extra money that I am able to get through the state definitely helps me in making my choices to where I want to go to school. Globe University, The class sizes are smaller. I have the ability to get back into the workforce. I'm nearly 30 years old and spent years, about 10 years in the workforce. And due to the condition, I am unable to work where I'd like to work. And I think that being able to accelerate my program and get myself out into the field faster to find a job where I am paying higher taxes is very important to me.
Okay, questions of Ms. Molinoff. Now Ms. Flannery, welcome to the committee. Just identify yourself for the tape, please.
My name is Janice Flannery, and I currently attend Rasmussen College in Lake Elmo. I chose Rasmussen for a lot of the same reasons that Nicole chose Globe. They offered combination classes for me online and on campus. I also do evening and daytime and online. Each quarter it's been a little different. For me, I'm a little bit older than Nicole, so, and this is my first college experience, and it was very important for me to get into the workforce as quickly as possible. I will graduate in December with my associate's degree in business with an emphasis on human resources. I have two children. My son also attends Rasmussen College. He transferred from a state college because of my experience at Rasmussen. He saw what I was gaining there, and that was the biggest reason why he transferred. My daughter will be a student in 2010, so this would directly affect my family personally. I want her to be able to have the same type of options. We don't know with this economy what kind of jobs we're going to be able to get, but I do know that with a degree, you have the potential to have a better paying job and one that you will be able to hold on to in the economy. The time factor for me going year round and being able to finish was a really big reason why I chose Rasmussen.
Okay, thank you. Question for Ms. Lannery. If not, then Mr. Cosell.
Mr. Chairman, members, Tom Cosell, I'm with Globe University, Minnesota School of Business, and I'm also the legislative chair for the Minnesota Career College Association. I've been in career education for 33 years. We gave you a copy of this previously, and here's another copy for you today. And I want to get to Representative, I think it was Clark's questions right away, and kind of ignore my prepared remarks and try to answer questions quickly. I know time is limited. I have data from the 06-07 award year. I tried to find 08 numbers, and that's the last full year I could find. In that year, 32% of the students that received grants, state grants in our system, had incomes of less than $10,000. So that was 32% of our state grant recipients. 85% of our state grant recipients that year had an adjusted annual income of less than $39,000. Students of color in that year, 06-07, we had 19% of our students were students of color. 64% of our students were women in that year. And 45% of our students were 25 years and older. So we serve non-traditional. We serve people that need to be in the workforce. You asked about programs that are unique or may not be replicated in the public system. Some examples I know are replicated but are unique and needed. We have a nursing program. Some of our schools are qualified for nursing. Minnesota School of Business has a four-year BSN program. We had our first graduating class in December, and so far 100% have passed the board, so we're very excited about that. They did in a three-year program. I look at Herzing College in Crystal, and they've invested in a huge dental lab for hygiene and dental assistance, which is a very much needed profession. I think that we're here just to request what you've always done as a committee and as a state legislature, and that is you supported the underlying principles of our financial aid program in the state, and those the two I see the underlying principles are help students achieve financial access to post-secondary education and enable students to choose among the post-secondary institutions. And that philosophy has got us to, I think, we're number six in the nation in an educated workforce, and I think there's a reason for that. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Representative Gunther, maybe we could have Ms. Smith come down right now then and testify, and then we can go to questions. Ms. Smith, welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the tape, and can we get a chair there for there. Thank you, Mr. Cosell. You might want to stick around then, Mr. Cosell. Welcome, Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Asia Smith, and I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber is the largest business advocacy organization in the state, representing over 2,400 members, 80% of which are small business. And I just want to very briefly testify against this bill. The Chamber opposes House File 1414 because it takes away post-secondary options for low- and middle-income students. Currently, the state grants, as we've already discussed, are targeted towards students who can least afford and therefore are least likely to attend higher education. It's very important to the state chamber that we have an educated workforce. And so these dollars are really intended to open doors and let students go to whichever Minnesota school they need. Taking for-profit options off the table for these students will reduce accessibility for those students to go on to higher education. As you already heard, for-profits offer programs that either aren't available or are different or are more accessible than some of the public systems. So I would urge you to oppose this bill, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. All right. Questions, and Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair, my question probably goes to Mr. Cosell.
Mr. Cosell.
And I'm not, no, let's see. 32% income less than $10,000. Mm-hmm. 85%, you said, under $30,000?
Yes, under
$39,999. 39,
sorry,
so 40,000.
Yes.
19% students of color?
Yes.
And you said 60% women?
64% women. 64%. That was all those 607.
How does that compare with the MNSCU and University of Minnesota numbers?
Favorable. I mean, I don't have those in front of me, and to me, it's the system of education across the board, and all four work together, the four sectors. So I think we, in that year, we had a good year. We served a lot of students that needed serving. Okay. Thank you. So I think it's favorable.
I think it's very favorable. Very, very favorable. And I would love to know the numbers. I don't know if the Office of Higher Ed has
the Office of Higher Ed can probably,
yeah, and we can pass this sheet around. Here's a sheet that has it. It's in our book. If you go to page 3, there's some comparisons there.
Oh, okay. I would just like to say that student aid is aid to students so they can choose where they go to school and how they spend it and what kind of career, secondary, post-secondary education that they get. It's for the students to decide. And when you look at the statistics, I don't know how you can do anything else but that.
Mr. Cosell, if I look at page 3, and I look at the comparisons there, the institutional grants seem to be a little different. How would that look if we looked at, say, the private not-for-profit?
I don't know those numbers. I know my institution that I work for, we gave, I believe last year, $1.5 million in institutional grants for students, but I'm not familiar with the nonprofit. I think theirs is much higher.
It's the only one that jumps out at me, members. But they're for profit, so they got to get their profits. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question maybe is for the Office of Higher Ed, actually. It's because as to what's currently listed in law, and I just had a question about the July 1, 2011 date and participating in the federal Pell Grant. So it's lines 1.14 to 1.16. I know we're not dealing with that today, but I'm just wondering if how that is as far as anticipating for-profit colleges to meet that criteria in the future. If that's, maybe Mr. Cosell can answer that too, but I just wanted to know if what Representative Bigham's change is moving it up to the fall of 2010, and it may actually happen in July of 2011 based on the current language.
Well, you're mixing two bills. Ms. Novak, can you answer that question, maybe?
Mr. Chair and members, I believe Representative Poppy is talking about the requirement in current law as included in this section, and there would be a relationship if the students at those institutions were not eligible for grants because of the change in House File 1414, it really wouldn't matter as much if they were eligible for the Pell Grant program. And there would still be an argument to be made to have them eligible for Pell Grants. It still doesn't address that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Novak. So are you saying that all of these not for profit private will be participating in the Pell Grant in the future.
Mr. Chair and Representative Poppy, well, Pell Grant participation, the requirements for that are set by the federal government.
Okay.
The current law links the requirements for the federal Pell Grant participation to the state grant participation beginning in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
This bill would supersede that in some ways by making students at for-profit institutions not eligible for a state grant before that time, before the 2011 date.
Right. I will let it go. I'm still a little confused because I'm trying to figure out if this actually is changing to great significance or not. I guess that's my question.
It would, Representative Poppy, the way I understand it, if it passed in its present form, starting next year, those lists that you saw here, they wouldn't be eligible either for a state grant.
Right.
And that's the only effect it would have on it. Okay. Representative Hawes.
Thank you very much. You know, when I first took this job, looked at this, and very quickly I looked at it and thought, well, why wouldn't we just invest our tax dollars in the lowest denominator and give that to the most amount of students? I mean, that seems logical. But then when you start looking at it, you're thinking, what are the students seeing? Why wouldn't they just all rush there because it's the cheapest to go over to that 2 year and get that degree out of the way, and that's what it is, and why aren't they as smart as I am? Because I see this automatically. But in my area, I have St. Cloud Votech, St. Cloud State, St. John's, St. Ben, St. Cloud School of Business, and Rasmussen College. And you corner these students and you ask them why they made the decision to be at the college they're at, they got some really good reasons. And maybe the cheapest wasn't the cheapest. Maybe in the long run it might have been the most expensive for them. Now what do we get when we invest this public dollar into this student? What are we going for here? I think we're going for an educated person that's going to get into the workforce and start paying some taxes and doing that well. Which one of those institutions is doing that the best? I don't think it's a 3x5 card look. I think it takes a very good analysis of that. And I think these students made some very good decisions at which college is working best for them. And I don't think we should change this chart too quickly, because I think you're going to see some unintended consequences. I was amazed at the answers I got out at the School of Business, why they were at the School of Business, and what a good deal we were actually getting for our dollar there. And I'm just surprised that side of the table is just jumping so much into this so fast. No, just joking, guys.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hawes, I think you might have said it better than I certainly can, just with some of your anecdotal evidence there. But just a reminder that profit, by definition, means that the value received exceeds the cost on an ongoing basis. And I second Representative Hawes' comments that people are not making bad decisions to choose a higher cost option. And one of the things that jumped out at me when I first heard the testimony from MCCA a month or so ago was actually your graduation and retention statistics. In 2006, graduation at a two-year public institution was 32%, and at a private for-profit two-year institution, it was 55%. And so I think as taxpayers and as stewards of public dollars here, if you look at the value for dollar, I don't think there's a very easy equation here. It seems to me that we should be trusting individual students to make a good decision. And in fact, if you think that's kind of time to market for these students to get back into the workforce and start paying taxes, somebody could probably construct a really good economic argument to say that we are far better off as a state to fund students going to these for-profit institutions. And I want to second the comments about us funding students as compared to institutions. I am actually a really big supporter of MNSCU. I think with the closing of the General College at the U, in many ways the future of our state hinges on the effectiveness of MNSCU. And I'd like to think that MNSCU is actually better off for having to compete with these private for-profit colleges and to improve itself by having to compete for those students and those loan dollars. So I really think the private for-profit colleges have made a really good case before this committee, and I too would urge a no vote on this bill. Thank you.
Representative Bly.
I just wanted to offer a little of my experience working in alternative schools, I would say that the for-profit colleges have done a good job reaching out to students who, in many cases, don't believe college is in their future. And I really commend them in their efforts to, you know, for whatever reason, commend them in their efforts to reach out to these kids. And I think it's a beneficial thing that they have that opportunity to come in help students see that higher education is something that they should pursue and get involved in. And if the grant program helps them accomplish that, I think that's a worthwhile thing.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple questions about number two. What do we know about beyond just graduation, and I think you were calling that retention. What do we know about the job retention and job opportunities, pay scale, and so on for the people that come out of these colleges? I have to agree that there are a lot of low-income people going there. I'm not sure that their opportunities, once they have that degree, really measures up to what, you know, some of the other institutions. So I'm wondering if you can enlighten me a little bit more about what numbers you might have.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I can get those for you. We are a loose kind of association of schools. We're independent of each other, so we have to gather those numbers. Nobody's asked for those in that sense, but we have follow-up from our graduates, and we'll get that information to the committee in terms of specific programs, would you like, and then the number of grads, and then what they're doing 2 or 3 years down the road.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, however far you can take it. I mean, it's really important right now, especially with, you know, a lot of the worker retraining that we're trying to get for different kinds of
right.
jobs. I think track records in terms of placement, but not just placement that lasts a little while, but placement that
follow up.
And what kind of opportunities for advancement? So. The less of a degree. I was noticing that you have a nursing school. You were saying
yes.
Earlier. These are registered nurses who graduate with a degree that's comparable to what degree of nursing in other institutions?
A BSN, a bachelor's degree.
A bachelor's science in nursing.
Yes.
And are they affiliated, or are you affiliated at school? Which school is this at?
Minnesota School of Business.
Minnesota School of Business.
In Richfield.
And what? Institutions that they affiliated with for their practical.
I need some help here. Do we have anybody from Global or MSC here? They passed the accreditation, so they're accredited by CCNE, I think it is. I'm not in that healthcare field, but they have a national accreditation, 5-year accreditation that they received a year ago. I'll try to get that data for you. We had clinics all over the city.
When you're looking at that, Mr. Chairman, thank you. When you're looking at that, I'm interested in what kind of career path they're able to enter
all
with
right.
the degree they get from your school as compared to some of the other institutions, other nursing institutions.
The clinics at the same institutions that other public schools have. I know we're competing for those sites, so we're on a level playing field there, and I'll get you the information.
Okay. And anything you can give me, Mr. Chairman, again, that would have to talk about advancement opportunities.
Understood.
I have some neighbors who've gone to a couple of these schools, and my impression is they're kind of stuck, but maybe there's something more you can tell me about this that I don't get so much.
Mr. Costell, maybe your organization can get that information.
Yes.
Representative Gunter.
Questions were very well handled by Representative Hart.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, then,
Representative Reiner, I believe it was, removes his motion. And House Bill 1414 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Okay. By me? I guess he calls for a division. My ears are. All those in favor of the amendment, raise your hand. All those opposed? Motion does not prevail. Thank you, Representative Bigham. Okay, members, we were going to have Representative Biscuit, but it's not going to be enough time for him to present today, so we'll have him first on the agenda on Thursday, and we have a bunch of Mead bills, and then we've got our special meeting Thursday night. So with that, members, Representative Gunther moves the minutes of the March 12th meeting. Any additions or corrections? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We'll see you on Thursday.